This episode of Fireside Chat is brought to you by Robert Woodward, lawyer at Altidore Law. He specializes in family law, wills, and estates for Flame fans in Calgary and Southern Alberta. Call Robert at 403-771-2187 and mention Fireside Chat to get $100 off any legal service.
Are you ready? Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
Happy bye week. As always, I'm Dan alongside Matt, and we're here for what might be one of our easiest episodes of Fireside Chat, easiest being that we don't have a lot to talk about this week. We've got, one game, and that's it. And, yeah, we got a bunch of other stuff planned, though. Matt, how's your bye week going so far?
Pretty good. I think the last time that we had one game week was, like, the very last game of a season or something like that. So it's been a bit of a stretch to try and find something to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's it's been a weird week. I mean, there's just no hockey, right? It's kind of odd. What do we do
I'm used to this in like August. Like, come on, we want.
It
some
does
games.
Feel like the off season.
I don't even care which teams are playing. Just some hockey.
Well, you had anything. You had the All-Star game.
As I said, some hockey.
Well, let's recap the one game we've got, as weird as that sounds. On the 22nd of January, the Hurricanes came to Calgary. This was probably the only time we've ever cared about the Hurricanes coming to town, because as we know, it's Bill Peters, Lindholm, and Hannifin's old team, and you got to think the coach really wanted this win. And the Flames ended up getting it for him in a 3-2 overtime win to the Hurricanes. I'll give some of my thoughts on this game, Matt, and then you can chime in. First thing in the first period, I don't know if that was a cake or a period of hockey, because there's so much icing. I can't remember the last time I've seen that much icing.
Well, that's part of the way Carolina plays, and Calgary kind of was sloppy as well, so it is what it is.
Carolina did a good job of clogging up the shooting lanes, though, and I thought, you know, this is one of those games where Calgary didn't play well. They played pretty much just what they needed to do to stay ahead, but they still got the win, which is the important thing. And, you know, you can't play every game as a big game, right?
Well, the thing is with Carolina, they're very much a advanced stats, Corsi type team, and they pay attention to that. But frankly, like, they did massively outshoot the Flames in the game, but not really any of their shots were of the extremely dangerous variety. And, like, if you're getting 40 shots, 30 shots, whatever, from those kind of positions, like, you're going to be lucky to score one or two goals in a game. And despite the Flames not really playing very well, I thought they had more chances through the first 40 minutes and pretty much right through the whole game, even though they were massively outshot.
I think the best chance there was James Neal's close goal in the second. I think that pretty much sums up his whole season so far.
Yeah. You got to feel bad for him. Like, he knows that he's struggling. We know he's struggling. And he gets a gift like that where all he just needs to do is, like, push the puck 5 feet and he gets a goal and it hops on him twice. Like, it just, you feel bad for the guy.
Yes. But, you know, it'll be an interesting. I think Neil's going to come alive in the last half of the season. And I think that we'll forget
same
that
here.
By the end.
And frankly, like, I think that what we'll likely end up seeing, like, even if he struggles the rest of the way, is somewhat like Travis Hamonic, where he was kind of borderline bad for most of last year. But this year he's been excellent. And I think that Neil might just struggle for this season and be himself beyond. Because there's too many elements of his game that are still good. It's just that so many plays are just going haywire like that one. That, like, he could easily have 6 or 7 more goals if he just had some better bounces.
Yeah, it's true. Talked after the game to Coach Peters, who told us that his team has earned the chance to rest and relax, but everyone knows that they need to be ready when they come back to work. So, obviously, you know, it's not like we now have to chase a lead. You guys can go relax. But he's kind of saying, when that Washington game comes, you better not be full of beer from Mexico.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, the Flames needed to get the points from the Carolina game. They have 71 now. They have a nice cushion on San Jose and an even larger one on Vegas.
San Jose is currently at 65.
That's
and
good.
Winnipeg at 64. Nashville 64 and Vegas 62.
Yeah, so we have some play there. And, like, you can have a bad game here and there moving on. But the Flames also have to stick with it, and frankly their schedule most of the rest of the season is easy comparatively. Like, only 11 games are against, like, the very elite teams from, like, Pittsburgh up in the standings, and, like, the other 21 are against the below average to awful teams, frankly. And, like, if you're comparing that with a team like Tampa Bay, like, they have 17 games against the elites, and I think 19 or something like that, 18, against the weaker side. So, you know, it's one of those things where, like, the Flames do have a little bit more leeway because they're playing a lot more inferior teams, but they also have to stick with it and play those games like they're wanting to win the conference.
And if you remember last year after the break, the Flames started to fade. That's when we really saw the downslide of Mike Smith. And it was interesting talking to Backlund after the game. He said that the guys learned from last year's break what to do and not to do. Wouldn't elaborate on that, but just kind of said that the guys learned from last year's break. So hopefully that there was some learning there and these guys come back strong.
Do not go partying with the Oilers. Because they turned into the Oilers.
Well, I don't know what the Oilers have to party about.
True. But, yeah, they were at the same hotel with them for their break last year. So whatever the Oilers have kind of rubbed off on the team last year.
Well, Matt, that's the show for the week. That's all we got to talk about. No.
Yep. Okay, thanks for listening,
I'm just
everybody.
Kidding. We actually have some. We asked everyone to reach out and give us some info and input on what they want to talk about. And we've actually got someone on the line with us now calling in from halfway around the world. This is Nick from Australia who's calling in. Nick, are you there?
Hey, guys. What's going on?
How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. It's 10:30 currently in the morning here. So,
oh, wow.
You know, just starting the day, but yeah, not feeling good.
So, Nick, we wanted to, before we get to your question, we just wanted to ask, how does an Australian become a fan of ice hockey, much less the Calgary Flames?
Well, I've actually got family in Calgary, and I visited Calgary in 2005. So, you know, the first thing when you get to Calgary, you hear about the Flames. And obviously, obviously coming back out of the lockout, so everyone was really excited that hockey was back. And the Flames obviously went to the Stanley Cup final, and obviously it didn't go too well. But, yeah, you just get drawn into it. And obviously I was a young kid, so you just, yeah, fall in love with it. I went to my first game, which was really exciting. And, yeah, that's basically it, really.
So, Nick, you said you came to Calgary. What time of year did you come to Calgary? Obviously, it was around hockey season.
Yeah, so I came to Calgary in December 2005. So I was there for, yeah, December. I went to two games. I went to the Ottawa game, which ended 2-1 in overtime, and Tony Amonte scored the game winner. And then I went to an LA game where we lost 5-3. So.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, so I saw two games, then also watched, obviously, a lot of TV as well. So, yeah.
That's a name I forgot played for the Flames. How about you, Matt? Tony Amonte.
I just can hear the echoes of the post and crossbar, even now. Echoes from the past.
Wow. Yeah, that's that is a blast from the past with Tony Amonte.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I've still got the game book from the LA game, and I've, you know, look through it every now and then, just like look at the roster and compare them to like the team we have now. And yeah, it's a bit different.
Much.
Well, the thing is, like, from like that whole stretch of time from like 2005 to 2010, the Flames were basically like a one or two line team. And like the lines they had were good, but they didn't have any depth. And that's the main difference between that team and this one, is that now the Flames can roll four lines and actually have good players on each line.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, we basically only had two players. I mean, you had Kipper and Nett, who is obviously just, you know, probably peak form. You know, Vezina came pretty much every year that season. So, yeah, that was pretty crazy.
So Nick, as an Australian, how do you watch your Flames games? NHL's app?
Yeah, so I've got the NHL subscription, so I get pretty much every game here. And the games are on a great time, like 7:30, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning. So it's not too bad. I try and watch, obviously, most games. But, yeah, it's a great time. I, you know, wake up, have some breakfast, and then watch some Flames hockey.
Sweet. So you had a question for us. You wanted to talk about Michael Frolik.
Yeah, I'm just obviously, you know, reading obviously Flames Twitter and Flames Reddit and just obviously listening to people. I find that people are very quick to jump on Frolik, and I find with a line, especially going into a playoff run, having a dead set line which is going to be strong and consistent each night, like that 3M line, I think going into a playoff where obviously playoff hockey, you hear how different it is and how important it is to, like, the structures and the systems are important. So I find having that 3M line is important. I don't really see the point of trading for a leak.
Yeah, I know. I mean, Matt and I have talked about that, and is Frolik kind of expendable? And he has been on that third line a lot this season. But, you know, I think going into a playoff run, especially if we're looking at going long and taking on a team like Tampa Bay potentially in the end, having that shutdown line that is the 3M line, if Peters keeps them together, is going to be of great value to the Flames.
And, like, if, like, the Flames do add a player, like, say they're wanting to get another offensive talent in there, they could also, like, depending on the matchups and the time of the game and that, they can always, like, put the offensive guy in there, like, if they need a goal, and put it for a leak in there if they've got the lead and they're trying to close the game out. So, and Peters is very quick to switch up lines on the fly, so it just depends, I think, on moving forward with the trade deadline. If they can get somebody that is decent and won't cost very much and is their appropriate age, I think you will see a Flames make a trade to get somebody. But it's one of those where if you can get it, great. But if not, like, it's not going to be the end of the world.
Yeah, I think that with Frolik having a multi-year, he's got a couple years left on the deal. I don't think there's any reason you need to move him, right
now.
Yeah,
the only way I could see Frolik really moving is this offseason. Like, say the Flames go and acquire a pending free agent, whether it's, like, Mark Stone or Gustav Nyquist or, like, eight different players. If they re-sign that guy, they will probably need a couple million dollars in cap space, and moving Frolik out would be, like, the easiest and cheapest way of both recouping an asset and fixing the cap problem.
Yeah, I think they'd probably move Michael Stone out first.
Oh, for sure. It just depends. Like, if they get his brother, I don't think they're going to move Stone out just because of that, but there's some flexibility. I think that I would be somewhat surprised if Stone and Frolik are on the team starting next season, just because I think the Flames are going to try to get another upgrade or two in the lineup elsewhere, or just to create a spot, like, say, for, like, the seventh defenseman. I think they'll create a spot for somebody else instead of having a $3 million guy just sitting on the bench.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, I think I don't see Stone sticking around for too much longer. Obviously, he's got the health issue with the blood clot, so I'm not sure when he's starting to get back. But yeah, I think obviously if you start looking around the league, obviously those top playoff teams are starting to make those sort of trades to get better in the playoffs. Like, you just saw that, like, the Leafs just traded to get Jake Muzzin. And so teams are starting to prepare for that long playoff run. So obviously I see the Flames as, obviously, they're going to make the playoffs, and we think they're going to make a long playoff run. So the Flames are going to start looking at something like that. Like, a Gustav Nyquist, I think, would be a great fit in that 3M line, but whether how much it's going to cost.
Yeah, same here. Well, I think that you're likely looking at slightly less than what the Leafs just paid for Muzzin to get Nyquist, because Muzzin does have another year on his contract, and he's cheap while being good, where Nyquist is a free agent. So I think it'd be like a first and, say, like, Mangiapane or something like that. Not anything, like, extreme in terms of cost.
That definitely could be.
Yeah, I think, like, the Leafs just gave away the first round and two prospects. So I think, yeah, Mangiapane obviously would probably be the player to go, and maybe even Dubé. But obviously, I'm always a little bit hesitant to trade away the a first rounder, because obviously we haven't had one. We didn't have one last year, and I think we're starting to scrape the barrel of prospects in the farm and stuff. So whether Flames want to get rid of that first round pick this year, I think we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, it depends on, like, I wouldn't be in favor of trading a first for, like, just any player. Like, if they can keep the guy that they get, sort of like the Evander Kane trade, where they did surrender a first, but, like, they still have him for another few years. It, like, if, say, the Flames got Nyquist and then signed him to, like, Backlund's contract, I don't think anybody would be really complaining about that. The usage of that first there, because you've got a quality second line right winger for like 4 or 5 years instead of the first round pick. It depends. Like, I wouldn't want to see like what Minnesota did the other year when they traded their first for Martin Hanzel and he was terrible and then left.
For sure.
Thanks. All right. Thanks for what you guys do. I really enjoy the podcast.
Well, thanks, Nick, for coming on. It's pretty cool that we have fans from all over the place. We've got Nick, who we talked to in Australia. I know we've got at least one fan who's in the UK. We'll talk to somebody later in Atlantic Canada. He left us a voicemail. So I really like, and talking to our audience, it's cool because here in Calgary, we have all the Flames media, right? We have all the, you know.
Oh, yeah. You can talk to like one of like 10 different people. Type of thing, where here, like abroad, there's only a handful of different voices to choose from.
And it's cool to see, like, you know, Nick, who's in a country that's not traditionally a hockey market, just to kind of see, you know, where that the Flames have reached down there.
Yeah, exactly.
So just for those that don't know the time difference, so it's 7:30 when we're recording here, and it was about, he said, 10:30 in the morning there, so quite a difference in timing. Well, Matt, let's read a couple other emails we got. We got one here from Simeon. Simeon asked us, well, when the Flames season started, if you told me the Flames would be tops in the West, I would have laughed and said no way, but somehow the Flames are doing it. So, you know, I think we all agree with him. I know you've been bullish on this team for a few years, thinking they're a Stanley Cup contender, but I don't think anyone expected them to be number one this early.
I think I'm alone in my sentiments, but that was just mainly because of the fact that, like, I've seen other teams that have risen to the top before, and, like, they have the elite players like Tkachuk, like Monahan, like Gaudreau, and the defense being what it was. So, like, that's why I was expecting the team to really take off last year and be one of the top teams, and obviously they fell flat on their face, but that was also due to the fact that half of the lineup was AHL caliber, and those players aren't here anymore, so that makes a big difference. And, you know, like, the top half of the team last year was just as good as, frankly, as the team has been this year. It's just that we're getting the secondary contributions from everybody else, and that's, I think, what's made the difference.
To me, I think one of the big differences as well is everyone seems to understand the system this year. I mean, how often last year did it seem like the guys just didn't know what they were supposed to be doing? I think Peters has really put together a system that these guys can appreciate, that these guys can use, that these guys can, you know, do good things with.
Well, I think part of what the problem was last year is Gullitson wanted the players to play a certain way, regardless if they were comfortable playing that way. And, like, we saw Sam Bennett struggle. We saw Ferland struggle, frankly, for most of the year. And a whole bunch of guys, just, like, Garnett Hathaway, that looked horrible, frankly, other than the first couple games when he first got there. And yet this year has been one of the better fourth liners that we've had in years. And the main difference is that Peters just lets the players play their game to the way that they like having Brody on the first pairing on the right side, even though he's a left shot. It's just stuff like that, where it, on the surface, it's like, oh, big deal, who cares? But the little things do add up. And if you're getting that little bit better performance from a guy like Sam Bennett, and Jankowski, and Hathaway, and Brody, all of a sudden, those players go from just being okay to being good relative to where they are in the lineup, and your team goes from just being okay to being first in the West and a cup contender. And
well, you and I have talked about it too. There's a difference between a coach coming in saying this is the system conform versus a coach coming in saying what pieces do I have and how do I build my system around those pieces.
Yeah, and like loosely, like the system is like the players are playing it very much in a manner that like where they're just using their skill just to completely eviscerate the other teams. And like we see on like most of the goals that the Flames score, that it's just like tic-tac-toe passing. They find the wide open guy and he fires the puck in the net, and just a lot of very highlight worthy goals this year. And where like instead of grinding it out, this team is doing what using the pieces what they have to their fullest extent, and it's working beyond expectations. And like frankly, like I didn't expect Lindholm to be as good as he's been. Like no. I was expecting him to be basically Michael Backlund on the wing, because that's what when I watch Carolina in the past, like, and watch him play, he has the occasional flash of brilliance, but he's just a very steady guy. And like I didn't expect to see him just blossom into what's looking like an 80-point forward. But I think that, you know, Carolina wouldn't have traded him if he was going to turn into an 80-point forward either. So, sometimes you fall into...
And I don't think he would have achieved anywhere near those numbers staying in Carolina.
Oh, no. No, like, I think he would have been, like, right there with Aho at around, like, 45 points at the most. Maybe even less, frankly. And, like, we've even seen that with Jeff Skinner, where he's turned into one of the elite players now that he's not in Carolina. And I think that, you know, like what I was mentioning earlier about them being focused too much on the Corsi angle is that, like, they're not setting themselves up to getting those good scoring chances. And, like, I even think that the Flames were guilty of that last year, where they were just shooting from anywhere instead of being patient and waiting for the good shots. And like now we're waiting for the good shots and we're scoring a lot more because of that. And
well, I think we also just have better positioning. Like I'm seeing the Flames scoring, shooting from not so great shots, but they've got guys who can put it in the right spot.
And that's exactly
the criticism of mine for years, you know, is there's no one in front of the net. Where's the guy in front of the net? Like we're getting more of those guys in front who can drive the puck home.
Exactly. And we're kind of a good team. It's so weird.
Just kind of? First in the West, just by fluke?
Well, you know, and you got to figure that if Mike Smith had played like an NHL caliber goaltender for the first 2 months, I think the Flames would be like 5 or 6 points in first ahead of Tampa Bay at this point. So it's a weird season. And I still think the Flames catch Tampa, to be honest. And I think the Flames win the President's Trophy, but that's, you know, just because of the weakness of our remaining schedule, but we'll see. But I'm hopeful that that's the case.
Well, Simeon, there you go. We agree with you that we never would have thought this, but it's amazing. And Matt, we got two more emails, both of them from the same guy, another Matt, who sent us this email. First one is, and this is something you like to talk about, trade deadline. With the trade deadline approaching, who is some realistic targets for adding a depth forward slash defenseman? Preferably a veteran who can at least add some sandpaper to lineup and does not cost more than a low pick. Any targets come to mind?
Well, for a cheaper target, for a depth defenseman, a guy like Nick Cronwall would be a decent option. I think you'd probably get him for the equivalent of a third round pick. And yeah, like that'd be okay. And frankly, like I think the Flames are either going to go big or go home. And I think that if they do get somebody, it's going to be a better player that they can hold on to. That's kind of in that same age group ish that the Flames key guys are in. And yeah, like if you're looking at a team like Philadelphia, maybe a guy like Couturier, that might work. Nyquist, I think, is on the upper end. A guy like Kevin Hayes in New York might be another fit. I don't see anybody really over the age of 30 coming in. I think that you're looking anywhere from like 24 to 29 in that age range and seeing kicking the tires. I don't know as if they'll spend a huge amount. Like, I don't expect, like, a first and, say, Shillington or Valimaki going or anything like that for one of those players, unless it's... Like, frankly, I'd be fine if it was a first and Shillington for Couturier, but that's, you know, you're getting a high-end, like, guy that's practically is a step behind Monahan, but not by much. So, you know, if that was the case, then fine, but, you know, it depends, and you don't really know the market until you get there, and, you know, it's just like the Dion Phaneuf trade. Like, no, none of the other GMs really knew that Dion was available, and if the Flames had gone and asked a bunch of teams, they might have got a better return than they did, but, you know, the Flames might be on the beneficial side of that, where they might be able to get a really good impact player for nothing, basically, comparatively. It just depends.
I think that there's very few high-end players this year, and I think the ones that are there are going to be very expensive. So if I go with sort of other Matt's solution here of sort of depth guys, I could see the Flames and the Ducks trying to do something for the Flames to bring in Delzato as a rental. I think for I'm not a huge fan, but looking at the looking at the available defenseman,
I'd rather just run with what we got.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of his. Maybe Joel Edmondson out of St. Louis. Like, those are the kind
of... Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad guy.
Those are the kind of young defensemen, bold left
I'm
shots.
Actually going to make a bold prediction that St. Louis makes the playoffs.
Okay.
Yeah. They were well out, but I think they're going to... They've put their stuff together, and I think they'll march right up and into a playoff spot.
Interesting.
That's the one team I'm worried about facing in the first round amongst the mediocre teams if the Flames win the division.
Okay. Interesting.
Their new goaltender, Binnington, is doing well, so I think that's what Jake Allen held them back, I think,
you know,
during the first part of the
year.
It
honestly seems to be the year of surprising goalies. I mean, you got Riddick, you got Binnington, you've got, you know, a bunch of guys that played in L.A. Like, it seems like, you know, even in Edmonton, Koskinen, like, it seems to be the year of the backup.
Well, at least we haven't paid $4.5 million for 19 games of an NHL goaltender like Edmonton. That was
true.
Such a dumb contract. But, you know, it's the Oilers. You come to expect that kind of
thing.
Well,
I mean, it costs someone their job, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's disappointing to see that Chiarelli got fired, because you never like to see anybody get fired. But, frankly, he's not the problem.
Nope.
And, you know, when you have the entire team being a hot mess, you need to... gut the whole team, basically, and they haven't done that.
Just continuing back on Matt's question here, looking at veteran guys, what about a guy like Adam McQuaid from New York as a rental?
That'd be okay.
Right-handed defenseman, 31 years old, not probably a guy they'd keep for a while, but a guy that they might be able to bring in as a rental. And then on the forward side, some names I'm picking out here. I could see the Flames actually going after Jamie McGinn out of Florida again as a rental.
Yeah, that might not be bad. Or, like, there's a whole bunch of guys that are just, like, quality fourth line guys that I think they could target, but...
I could see them also trying to get Kruger out of Chicago.
I think he costs too much, and, like, he has too many years left on his contract.
He's a UFA at the end of this year.
Isn't he? I thought he had another year or two left.
According to Cap Friendly, he's on the list of guys who expire this year.
Okay, my mistake. Must have had it confused with somebody else.
28, not a bad guy to bring in for a rental, and then you can see if you want to bring him back or not. But I think, especially with a Tkachuk contract looming, I think anyone they bring in, it would be sort of a, you know what, we want to bring you in. If you're good, we'll see if we can re-sign you in the summer. But I don't think they want to take on a long-term deal right now.
Yeah. Well, the only way I could see it, really, is, like, if they're, like, a... more of a mid-tier guy like a Nyquist or whatever, where, like, say Nyquist, like, he's not going to get more than $5.5 million a year for, like, on a 5-year contract. So, like, if you take Frolik's 4.5 out, it costs you an extra $1 million for a vastly better player. So, like, there's things like I could see them doing that kind of an equation, but, you know, and, like, cheaping out a little bit somewhere else. It just depends, really, on the acquisition costs, and you don't know until we get the actual trade out to see what it is, really.
And then Matt asks us another question here. He said, thanks, love the show. Follow-up here, what do we do if Valimaki keeps it up in the AHL and Stone comes back healthy? So just for a little context, Valimaki didn't get a 9-day break like the rest of the team. They sent him and Mangiapane back to the AHL, and Valimaki's looking pretty good down there so far. So I think he's asking, do we bring Valimaki back up, do you think? What do we do when Stone comes healthy? What would you do? We probably want to carry 7 defensemen. What do you think that 7-man rotation looks like, Matt?
Well, it depends on how Valimaki plays in Stockton. I'd probably leave him there for like another week or two, just so he can be 100% and back into things. Because usually with like ankle injuries like his, it usually takes 4, 5, 6 games to iron things out and feel more normal. And we'll see. And like if he... can work those things out. I think he's a better player now than Shillington, but Shillington's also very good. So I don't know. Like, I think you might see Shillington and him swapped at some point, but it just depends, really. And it's hard to quantify exact. I think Stone's going to be the number 7 regardless for the rest of the way, and the Flames might upgrade number 8. Which would be, like, the left-handed, you know, like, 7A and 7B. So,
do you think Prout gets sent to the AHL then?
Yeah. Or included in the trade, one or the other.
I don't know who wants Dalton Prout. I mean, we
couldn't get rid of Bartkowski. Well, just, here, take this contract, just so we don't have it. And I think if that...
I don't know, it's cheap enough, I think you just bury it.
Yeah.
I agree with you for right now. I think when they come back from the break, we'll see Gio Brody, Hamonic, Hanifin, Anderson, Shillington as the 3 pairings. I think Stone will be ready when they come back. And I think for now they'll carry 8 with Prout. If it was me, I would leave Valimaki in the AHL. I think it's, as I said with Dubé, I think it's going to be more beneficial for him to be down there and play a bunch of minutes. And, you know, you can always bring him back around the playoffs, but I just... Even though he might be a little bit better than Shillington right now, I don't see a need to rush him up. It's not like he's an imperative spot with this team.
True.
You know, I think he will be back here, especially if we end up taking a playoff spot, which we're going to. But I just don't see the need to rush him up. Let him play down there. Let him feel good. Let him get some legs under him and then bring him back. And also, I mean, I'd rather not bring him back to sit out. So... You know, leave Shillington there. Shillington's fine until we sort out some of the backlog on defense.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised if one of the first moves the Flames make when they come back is sending Prout through waivers.
Yeah, I could see that.
And no one's going to claim him.
Oh, no. Well, you never know. Right, Edmonton might need a new number 4 defenseman.
Well, the issue with claiming a guy is you got to keep him on your roster for the year.
No,
and
you
even
don't.
Edmonton, I think, wouldn't want to keep him. No. Well, that's true. If you waive him, though, he's optioned back to the original team.
Yeah, well, the other team has the first right of refusal, and usually they just say, yeah, we're good. Like, the only one I can recall that was reclaimed by their old team was Alex Yerbaum, who was claimed from New Jersey by Washington, and then... New Jersey claimed him right back. But, wow. Yeah, and that was like 5 years ago. So.
And then we saw today, what was it? Dallas and Pittsburgh made a trade back. They traded back the 2 pieces they'd already traded. Did you see that?
Yeah, I know. And we don't like how this went, so do you want to just undo it? Okay, sure. Awesome. Thanks.
It was what, Jordan Osterley for a 4th or something, and that was an earlier trade, yeah. Then they traded back?
Yeah, Jamie Oleksiak.
There you go.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, yeah, we crossed our fingers and made the trade. Now we can trade back.
Yeah.
I'm surprised the league office approved it.
Well, it's been over a year, so it's like, and Dallas did need a defenseman, so they're like, eh, sure, why not? So it works.
Well, that's the end of our emails. I told you guys last week I had some exclusive content for this week, and I've had a couple people ask me on Twitter, what is it like to go to a Calgary Flames game as a media person? Everyone knows what it's like to go as a fan and sit in the dome. So I thought I'd walk you guys through a little bit of what my day looks like when I go for Fireside Chat to cover us as media. So the doors open 2 hours for the game. Well, the doors are open earlier than that, but there's the media dinner is 2 hours for the game, and it's in the Ed Whalen Media Lounge, which is right at ice level. So we actually go in the Zamboni door. There's a little bit of a security check there. Once you get through it, it's $5. You get a really nice media dinner. It's a buffet. You can go multiple times. Sometimes I don't eat lunch on those days because I know I can go to the dinner multiple times. And you're sitting in a room with players, with sometimes coaches or other team personality, the media personalities. It's a really cool atmosphere. You sit with, you know, the radio guys, the TV guys, even the penalty box guys who run the box and everything and have dinner. Then after that, we go up an elevator. Thankfully, there's an elevator that goes up to level 2, which is you still got to climb the stairs to the nosebleeds, but at least we don't have to walk all the way. It sucks when the elevator's broken, though. And you go up there to the press box. If anyone's ever been up to press level seating, you'll see the two blue walkways, the catwalks, to get to the press level. And once you're up there, it's really narrow. It's a weird press box because it's so narrow. Like, two people can't stand next to each other. And there's an assigned seat. They have free soft drinks, free popcorn for us to eat up there. So if you didn't get enough good food, you can pig out on crappy salad on popcorn. It's weird. They bring the popcorn up actually in a plastic bag, pre-popped, and they put it in a popcorn machine just to heat it up. So it's kind of disgusting. But it's, you know, salad on popcorn. That's kind of what you expect, right?
Well, their popcorn isn't that bad.
I guess it's bad when you see it come out of a plastic garbage bag.
True.
Like, you kind of think it's freshly popped at the concession stand or whatever, but it looks like it's all pre-popped and just put back into the popcorn machine.
Well, I think that's the way they do it on the main floor, too, because I've, as a season ticket holder, I've seen them carry those bags to the various concession stands as well, so.
There you go. We're spoiling some of the secret of the Saddle Dome.
Yeah.
And then we watch the game up there. If we need to use the bathroom, that's a question I've got a few times on Twitter. We actually have to leave the press box and go into the bathroom in the press level, in the nosebleed section there, so there's no bathroom for press. And we're on one side, and all of the managers and stuff like that are on the other side. And then after the game, we go back down from the press box, and we're in the media lounge for a couple minutes, arming and getting ready and getting our recorders out. And then it's off to the Flames dressing room, and often we wait outside the dressing room for about 5-10 minutes while the guys get undressed. They all go in and shower and take their gear off, and then they actually come back out into the main dressing room with their, you've probably seen them with their black Calgary Flames, shirt, undershirt on, and we interview them there. And once that's done, probably about 15, 20 minutes, depending on how many guys we get, then it's back to the media lounge, and that's actually where they do the coaches' scrum. So you've seen the coach at his podium with the black Flames banner before, Matt.
Uh-huh.
Right behind that, that's just a screen they pull down, and right behind that's the buffet table.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't know it by looking at it. You think it was a permanent installment, but they just pull that down, have Peters talk, and then they pull it back up when he's done.
All the special features that nobody knows about.
So it's probably, I'm there probably about 2 hours for the game and an hour after the game, but it's a lot of fun. And some people have asked me, so I thought I'd share some of that with you guys. I also wanted to let you know, being around the team sort of in this way for 3-4 years now, this is probably the best dressing room environment that I've ever been part of. Like, the music's always blaring when we go in there. The guys look like they're having fun. In the past, it was a lot of really grumpy, especially grumpy captain, where it's like, oh, crap, we blew another game. I got to go talk to the media. And everyone seems like they're enjoying talking about their games. More guys are available than ever before. It's just, it's a really cool atmosphere to be around.
Well, winning does solve a lot of things.
For sure. And, you know, like I said, the music's blaring. It just seems like they're all having fun. And I think that's probably part of what's, you know, getting them the win. When you're having fun doing what you do, you're going to do it better. So why don't we do something a bit different here? We have a musical interlude tonight, something we don't normally do. And this is a musical interlude from a Calgary band called The Dudes, and they have a song all about the Calgary Flames, and it's called Saturday Night, My Sea Is All Right. And we'll play that here, and then we'll come back right after the song.
Started scaring of the stands. I'll be at 555 Saddle Dome Rise, and it's hello, hockey fans. We got fired up in the first, hottest bands in first. When the boys hit the ice, it will be weeknight every night. Any night is Saturday night. It's Saturday, Saturday, Saturday. The cabaret on a Saturday night. I got my first kiss right on my girl's lips. I knew it was right. Behind Centennial Arenas on a cold, dark Saturday night. It's Saturday, 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 Saturday night. My dreams are all red on my teeth.
Find them on Facebook. They're facebook.com/wearethedudes. On Twitter, they're at wearethedudes. And Instagram, instagram.com/wearethedudesyyc. Or you can find them on Bandcamp. And we'll put all those links in the show notes. Kind of a fun song. It's very much an epitome of growing up as a hockey fan in Calgary. I love that song. And thanks to the dudes for letting us share it with you on the show. It's a lot of fun. If you want your own copy, we'll put a link to Bandcamp. You can buy it for $1, which is a pretty good deal for a song like that. It's a fun Calgary Flames song. Maybe it's the new playoff anthem. We'll see.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's always the playoff anthem, right? Everyone knows the In the Dome. There was one that we played on the show last time we were in the playoffs. The question is, what's going to be the playoff anthem this year? And this one's already out there, so why not? And the dudes are a good Calgary band. Well, Matt, we just finished the All-Star game. That was this past weekend. We know that the Flames had one player and one coach in the All-Star game. The first time I can remember we've had a coach in the All-Star game.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Overall, did you watch the All-Star game?
Nope.
Did you watch the skills comp?
Nope. The skills competition the last 2 years was not as good as the skills competition has been in the past. So, like, I kind of lost interest entirely in the entire weekend. The first year of 3-on-3 was pretty good. But, now none of the players really care at all. And it's not really an interesting game. It just looks like, basically, your local neighborhood scrimmage. Like, nobody really cares. And
my issue with it is the game of hockey in the NHL is played as a 5-on-5 game. Why does the All-Star game now switch to 3-on-3?
I know. Frankly, the one cool thing was having the women's hockey players playing in the skills competition. And I honestly think that because of how lax the actual All-Star game is, they should have some female players in the actual game itself. Like, say, two per team.
Well, I heard on Twitter today, what if you were to have the NHL All-Star team take on the women's All-Star team? Like, make an All-Star team of Olympic women's players.
Well, I think that would be very one-sided. I think if you, added a couple to each team, that it would work a little better. I don't think, I think the men's hockey team would probably win that game, by double digits, frankly, and it is what it is. It's any men's versus women's sports. It's not not the same level of talent, but having them included in the All-Star game itself, I think, would be better.
So here's my idea for the All-Star game. Tell me what you think. We see the NHL wanting to branch out into new markets, as they say. We saw, Calgary and China this year. We see teams go to Germany and Finland every year. What if the All-Star game was an international event? What if it was one game? You don't even need to do the skills comp, but send the guys over for, let's say, a weekend, and international cities bid on hosting it.
It wouldn't work. The players would not want to go overseas and, get jet-lagged from that. Your idea is cool, but I don't see that working logistically.
Because, you remember when it used to be, the Soviet team, and I think it'd be neat if you could almost go there and play the local team.
Yeah. That'd be a cool idea, but I don't see logistically how it would work during the season.
I think you'd have to build it into the bye week.
Yeah.
You'd have to almost, like they do for the Olympics, shut the whole league down for the same week, send the guys over. I think if you did it for one weekend, it wouldn't be too bad. You send them over, you play the game, you send them back. It wouldn't screw up their schedule a lot if they're not staying there. I think that would bring some international flavor to it. Because I always liked the idea in the 90s of the North America versus the world format. But since then, I haven't really found an All-Star format I liked.
Yeah, I know. Frankly, the All-Star game's just kind of blasé. It always kind of has been, but, it's even more so. There's no real enthusiasm in the game at all. And, it was never the most entertaining of games anyway, but, it now especially, it's who cares?
Remember in the World Cup, it was, I forget what they called them, Team Young Stars or whatever, all the under 25
Team North
guys.
America.
What if you were to do an under 25 versus everybody else All-Star game?
The under 25s would take it.
Well, do you remember they used to have a Young Stars game on the day of the All-Star game?
Yeah, when their young players weren't that very good, and now pretty much all of the good players in the league are young. So,
yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting conundrum. I haven't watched the All-Star game myself in a few years. I haven't even watched the skills comp. I don't care.
Yeah, I know. And that's part of the problem with it. It just, it's cool. If they had it in Calgary, I'd go. Just because, hey, it's cool. The All-Star game's here. beyond that, it's like, meh. Why am I going to waste my afternoon? I got something better to do on the weekend. If it's not Flames, who cares?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that they're going to need to do something to reform it. I don't know what. It might almost be neat to do, like, and I know you couldn't do it that time of year. You'd need to do it in June, but almost do, like, the All-Stars versus all the guys that are in the draft class. It's an interesting thing to think about. Something that I was thinking about today, which I never really thought of before, I wonder if it would make sense to combine the bid for the All-Star game and the draft together so you get both of those in the same year.
I think you have to spread that around a bit just because, like, there's 31 teams. Like, if there was, like, 15 teams, you could probably do that. It's just there's too many. And, like, they gotta give, like, each team a little present, so to speak, and from time to time to keep the fan base happy with, like, something interesting hockey-related in their city.
It tends to go to the teams that have new arenas. Like, I think when we get our new arena, we'll probably get the All-Star game that next year.
Yeah, or within the first, like, 4 or 5 years. But, yeah, we'll see. It's just like when the Sal Dome opened, the Flames had the All-Star game in 85, I think it was. So, you know, we'll see.
And, you know, maybe the better way is not do an All-Star game and just do, like, the World Cup tournament or something in the summer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Actually, I think, frankly, if they just kind of scrapped that whole thing, I'd be fine with that.
Well, I think the league probably needs the revenue from one or the other.
True.
Like you said, you'd go. People buy tickets to the thing. It's quite a weekend. I think that if they scrapped it, they'd need to find some other way to make up some revenue there.
True.
I would almost like to see the All-Star game take the skills comp out or replace it with some sort of an alumni game. Like, one of the things I like most about, say, the Flames outdoor game was the alumni game. And what if there was almost a, on day one, it was a Hall of Fame All-Stars, whatever you want to call them. And day two, it was the regular All-Stars. Or even do the skills comp with both types of guys in there.
Yeah, well, if I recall correctly, the in baseball, they have, like, a old-timers game. And the same night that the home run derby is. So, you know, you could go along that route.
Current city alumni versus league all-stars or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what the NHL gets to, but I wouldn't imagine we'd see a change until at least the next CBA.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Well, Matt, to finish up tonight, before we do our predictions, we have a voicemail from someone who's tweeted us a few times. We've read his question on the show, Ryan Swanson. Former Alberta boy, it sounds like, and he has some questions for us about fantasy hockey. So let's play that voicemail.
Hey, this is Ryan Swanson from Nova Scotia. Grew up a Flames fan in Alberta and love listening to the podcast. I like when you guys do your predictions and wondering your thoughts on, for future shows, doing some fantasy hockey aspect in regards to Flames players. I enjoy hearing your guys' predictions, and I like it that it's at the end of the show. Anyways, well done, guys. And, yeah, keep on doing some good stuff there.
Well, thanks for that, Ryan. Great to hear that somebody likes the predictions. Sometimes Matt and I think it's just us playing this game and nobody else cares, but it's awesome that you like that. And as far as fantasy hockey goes, let us know what you want. I mean, everyone has a different scoring system in their game. I know I play a game at work, and we score very differently, so I'm not sure what we could cover, but if you let us know what your thoughts are, we definitely think about it. And if you want to leave a voicemail like Ryan did, we'll play it on the show in a coming show. You can call us or text us 587-200-7176. Again, that's 587-200-7176. Leave a voicemail like Ryan did, or you can send us a text message and we'll read it on the show. So, Matt, I guess this means we're back to predicting hockey because we only had one game last week. It was a one-game week, and we both predicted a win from Carolina.
Hey, we're both right.
So, as of this point, I'm beating you 5-3 in the prediction game, if we count that as a tie week and we both get a point.
Yeah. Hey, I don't really care if I lose to you. As long as the Flames are continuing to kick everyone else's butt, that's fine by me.
You're willing to be the sacrifice.
I could not care less.
There you go. It's not like we should get a cup or something for the two of us. We should, like, take tinfoil and put it over a cup, and that can be, you know, our version of the cup.
Yeah.
Lord somebody else's cup.
Yeah. Well, you know, official Fireside Chat Swami.
There you go. We'll figure it out. Our microphones are Heil brand. Maybe we'll call it Lord Heil Cup or something.
No.
The paste a mustache on it and it can be the Lanny Cup. We'll figure something out. Well, Matt, we got two games coming up this week. Both of them are away. Friday the 1st, the Flames are in Washington. That's a 5 p.m. start time, taking on the Capitals. And because he didn't go to the All-Star game, Ovechkin is suspended for a game. First time I've ever heard of a guy suspended who gets to pick when he wants to serve his suspension.
Actually, that's always been a thing. You can either choose to be before the All-Star game or after. And they played against Toronto, so it made more sense to go play the game against the conference opponent versus the non-conference opponent.
So Ovi will be out on that game, and then Calgary makes a quick stop over in Carolina on Sunday. That's a noon start time, Calgary time, and those are both away games before they come back to Calgary the following week. But two games in the docket. I'll give you my predictions. I think it's a rough week for Calgary. I think they lose both. I think coming off the bye week, I don't think their heads are going to be quite in it yet.
I'll go the exact opposite and say that they keep rolling and win both.
I hope you're right.
Washington, they've been kind of struggling lately. Like, they're still a good team. Like, they're one of the top teams in the league. But just lately, they've been kind of having an iffy run. And with them not having Ovechkin, the Flames... Like, I wouldn't expect it to be a blowout by any stretch, but the Flames could win that one. And Carolina frankly sucks as a hockey team. So, you know, they have the ability to beat bad teams, but, like, the Flames really didn't show up that much, and they still got 2 points. If the Flames actually show up, they easily win that game. So...
I'm just worried that they're not going to show up after the long break.
Yeah. Well, I think they will have learned from last year to, like, just keep the foot on the gas. And, you know, I think that because of the fact that the Lightning have such a difficult road the rest of the way, that I think having that motivation of, hey, can we win the President's Trophy, that might also be a motivating factor to keep them at least focused more so than not. And, like, the points don't really matter. Like, the Flames are going to make the playoffs regardless. But the more that they are at least consistent, the more that they'll be more likely to roll right through into the playoffs and roll over whatever teams they face.
Yeah, I think they'll straighten it out by the San Jose game. And I think looking at the schedule for this game, the most interesting one has to be the away game on the 12th where they do take on Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And we've played them already, but we'll see how they look, you know, facing them in the second half of the season.
Yeah. And, like, there isn't really that many games this upcoming month against good teams, like Washington, San Jose, Tampa, Pittsburgh, and the Islanders twice are the only games that are, like, against good teams, like Carolina, Vancouver, Florida, Arizona, Anaheim, Ottawa, New
Jersey.
Well,
and even a lot of those games are Eastern Conference opponents. So even if you give up a point or two, it's not going to necessarily hurt you in the standings. I mean, we might slip a little bit, but we're not giving a point to somebody right behind us.
Exactly. And as long as they can keep, like, frankly, with the 13 games they play, if they go 9-4, I think that'd be a good month. Anything better than that would be awesome. But I think that anything less than that, and things get a little more dicey in terms of the division title, so, you know, we'll see.
Well, Matt, I think that's about all we got for Flames hockey this week. Anything else you can think of?
No, just looking forward to Flames getting back into action and hopefully put some good habits moving forward the rest of the way, and maybe a trade or two. We'll see. Like, this is the time period. Like, frankly, if it was me, I'd be trying to get a deal done, like, more towards now, like Toronto did with Muzzin, than leaving it right to the deadline.
I don't think you can trade during your break.
No, I know. But, you know, like, more towards, like, the first week or so of February instead, just to give the new guy or guys more of an opportunity to fit into the team. And I think that's why Toronto was so quick to get Muzzin in on the team. just for that reason. And I think that if a trade's going to happen, it might end up being sooner than later. And we might end up having something to talk about on that front on our next show or this one after that.
Even more than just getting the guy acclimatized to your team, it's about setting the price as opposed to following the price. The earlier you make the trade, the more you're helping set prices. If you wait till the end, now there's established prices for what you're going to have to give up. And I think that's why a lot of GMs like to get things done a week or two before the deadline.
Yeah. Well, it also depends on what type of players. Like, if you need a fourth line guy, you can leave that right until an hour before the deadline. Like, who cares? But, you know, I'm willing to give this to any of, like, eight teams for this type of guy. You know, does anybody want that? And, you know, if someone says yes, deal done.
Yeah, and we have seen in the past for some of those top players that, you know, the market, they've been waiting for one guy to get traded, and the dominoes didn't fall.
Yeah. Like, I remember us, holding on to Camilleri 1 year. Just because he was, like, the fifth guy, and the first guy didn't go until really late, and it screwed everybody else. So, yeah, we'll see.
Well, maybe we'll have a trade to talk about, maybe not. But either way, we'll probably have two hopefully good games and two hopeful wins when we come back to talk in the week of the 4th of February. I can't believe it's going to be February already when we come back.
Yep, looking forward to the remaining 30 games in the season, and hopefully the Flames can be excellent the rest of the way.
And thanks to everyone who listens to us. We want to remind you, either yourself, if you don't follow us on Facebook or Twitter, to do that. Our Facebook is facebook.com/firesidechat. On Twitter, we're at Fireside Podcast. And if you do follow us, and obviously you're listening, let a Flames fan friend of yours know about the show. We want to get it in as many Flames fans' ears as we can. We want to take over the Sea of Red, and as you heard today, we have fans all over the world, which is kind of cool. I know we have some in Europe. We've got a Finnish fan, so let's try to get as many Flames fans either in Calgary or abroad listening to Fireside Chat as we can. And with a long playoff run, we're here to keep everyone informed about the team all the way probably up till July this year.
Well, it'd be nice if the Flames go on a deep playoff run, because we'll have a lot to cover and hopefully some nice silverware at the end.
Knock on wood, but it's going to be weird sitting here in shorts and a t-shirt talking Flames hockey in like May and June.
Well, compared to our usual winters, this is t-shirt and shorts weather.
That's true, but it's, yeah, I'm talking about an actual t-shirt, not a figurative t-shirt and shorts.
True.
All right, Matt, well, you have a good week, and we'll talk to you next week.
As always, go Flames, go.
Fireside Chat is hosted by Dan Stevenson, co-hosted by Matt DeBorg. This episode produced and edited by Peter Marino. Fireside Chat is licensed under Creative Commons license. For full license details, visit firesidechat.ca.